Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
Good morning, I'm Chris Farrell, sitting in for Angela Davis. If you're listening to NPR News, and I'm glad that you could join us today. If you're lucky enough to work for an employer that offers paid family and medical leave, you know how important it is to be able to take time off from work when you really need it. But it's up to the employer to offer the option. Paid leave lets people keep part of their paycheck while caring for a newborn or after adoption. Paid leave can also be used to care for a family member, say, an aging parent, or the employee can deal with their own illness. Most working Americans have access to unpaid time off for family and medical needs, but only one in four workers have paid time off. For years now, some DFL lawmakers have been trying to change that in Minnesota, and now it's almost sure to happen. Minnesota is poised to start a new state-run program to bring paid leave to almost every working Minnesotan. So today, we're going to talk about what the proposed state insurance program would do and how the benefit would be financed. We'll also look into the concerns a number of small businesses have expressed that the program is another cost they'll have to absorb. And I want to hear from you. What was your experience if you took paid time off for a medical or family need? If paid leave wasn't an option, how did you cope? And if you're an employer, especially a small business owner, what are your questions or concerns about how this would work? Phone lines are open. Calls at 651-227-6000 or 800-242-2828. Now, to bring us up to speed on where this proposal stands, I have with me Dana Ferguson, politics reporter with NPR News. Dana has been at the Minnesota State Capitol covering family leave and plenty of other issues as the legislature wraps up the session. So good morning, Dana.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me.
I'm really glad you're here to sort of like break this down for us, okay? So first, tell us how this paid family and medical leave system would work.
Sure. Under the proposal, workers and employers in the state would pay into the program through a payroll tax. And similar to the state's unemployment insurance fund, workers could then get partial pay replacement if they get sick, want to care for a new child, or need to care for a loved one.
Okay, so how much of their pay can employees expect to continue to earn if they do take a leave?
Workers could then take time off for medical or family leave, and they would get partial pay replacement. The payment is scaled, so lower income earners would have close to 90% of their income covered through the program, while higher income earners would get around 55 to 70% covered. And those benefits would start in 2026.
Now, I know we're talking something of a fast-moving target. I think there's lots of changes going on, but there were differences in the timelines that the House and Senate proposed.
That's right. The House approved an 18-week total cap, while the Senate passed a higher cap of 20 weeks. Over the weekend, a conference committee adopted the 20-week maximum. So if a person got sick or had a baby, they could take 12 weeks of leave from the state program. And then if they had to take care of a loved one in the same year, they could take 6 more weeks to do that. Workers wouldn't have to take all of that time in one block, though.
Okay, so what's the cost of the program? Or I guess I could put it somewhat differently, you know, how will it be funded?
Lawmakers are proposing to use more than $600 million of the state's budget surplus to get the program started. And then businesses as well as employees will split a 0.7% payroll tax to fund it. The tax is expected to bring in about $1.5 billion to the program every year.
So why was this a DFL priority?
Yeah, Democrats have been working to pass this program for several years. They see it as a benefit for some of the lower paid workers in the state who don't get benefits like this now. And they point out that many businesses already offer a paid leave program to higher paid employees. They also say that women are less likely to have a paid family leave benefit. And then they often say that they're the ones who are caring for young children and elderly parents in our society. So they really see it as an effort to level the playing field among workers. And they say, especially after the pandemic, it makes no sense to force people who are sick to come to work where they could pass an illness on to others.
And so, and I just have to say, you have a terrific story on, if you go to our website, nprnews.org, you have a terrific story this morning about the concerns of people who are opposed to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, Republicans have said it's a one-size-fits-all solution that is being imposed on businesses, whether they want it or not. They point to the tax increase that will pay for it and say risks making Minnesota uncompetitive with other states. They also say it will be a big new bureaucracy to state government, as many as 400 workers being employed to staff it. So some businesses, as I mentioned in the story, worry about being able to find skilled replacements for people who are taking the leave. And they also worry about the cost and the requirements for meeting more state regulations. Republicans had suggested a voluntary program of tax incentives administered by a private insurance company and said that would be a better option because businesses could tailor that plan to work for them. But Democrats say that wouldn't meet the needs of workers.
Okay, so what comes next at the Capitol?
Yeah, as I mentioned, a conference committee approved a report over the weekend that incorporates pieces of the House and Senate bills, and that agreement has to be passed again in both chambers. If and when that happens, the bill will go to the governor, who has said he will sign it into law. But I should be clear, Chris, it's likely the legislature would come back next year and into the future to make some tweaks and changes to the program as it's put in place.
Well, thanks a lot. This has been great. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Dana Ferguson is a politics reporter with NPR News. So now let's bring in our guests for the hour. Representative Ruth Richardson is the DFL lawmaker in the Minnesota House representing Mendota Heights. She is also the chief author of the House version of the paid family and medical leave bill. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And John Reynolds is the Minnesota State Director for the National Federation of Independent Businesses. The organization represents small businesses in Minnesota. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So, Representative Richardson, let's start with you. And why is paid family leave so important?
Well, I think Dana laid it out really well. The system that we currently have right now is all about luck. And whether someone is lucky enough to work with an employer that has that provides access to paid family medical leave. And what we know with the current system that we have, the individuals who are most likely to be left out of the program are women, people of color, and low-income workers. And we recognize that at some point, all of us are going to need time to care for ourselves, for others. And this bill really recognizes that universal humanity to ensure no one has to choose between caring for themselves, a loved one, or a paycheck.
And you heard what, the overview that Dana gave, which is terrific. But is there anything you would like to add?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is really important when we talk about, you know, we've heard a lot about what's the cost of, you know, paid family medical leave. What we hear less of is what's the cost of not having a paid family medical leave program. And we know within states that offer paid family medical leave programs that infant mortality decreases. Here in Minnesota, every year, we have more than 350 infants that die annually. Paid family leave programs reduce preterm births and the number of low birth weight babies that are born. Annually, there's a cost of over $370 million in costs of care related to preterm births. Hospitalizations decrease. That's an average cost with infants of about $70,000 each a year. And so just recognizing that maternal mortality decreases, postpartum depression decreases, reliance on public assistance, and also female participation in the labor force increases, I think it's important that we talk about the cost that we're bearing as a state by not having a paid family medical leave program as well.
Well, John, what are you hearing from small businesses in Minnesota? I mean, what are their worries about the current bill?
Yeah, so NFIB represents over 10,000 small businesses in every corner of the state, every sector from family farms to small manufacturers to mechanic shops, machine shops, flower shops, everything, you name it, restaurants, cafes. And from everyone, every one of our members, the very first question that I get is, how am I going to replace workers for 3, 4, 5 months a year? It's just a very different a question for small businesses than it is for large businesses who may overstaff as a matter of business planning. Small businesses don't have that luxury. So when, if you're a 5 or 10 or 15 person shop and you're missing one or two people for 3, 4, 5 months, that is just a huge dent in your operations. And you know, that exacerbates one of the biggest concerns that small businesses have right now, which is a chronic worker shortage that's not expected to abate because Minnesota's population isn't growing.
And so tell us what's happening right now, you know, currently before this possibly becomes law. I mean, what are small business owners in Minnesota doing when they have families that need to take time off or have workers who need to take time off for family reasons or medical illness?
Yeah, they work, small businesses work so hard to take care of their employees. My members tell me so many different stories about what they do to make situations like that work for both the business and the employee, whether it's flexible work schedules or just giving them a little bit of extra time off and trying to get by and patch it up with overtime or whatnot. But, what I hear over and over from our members is, you know, they'll do anything to try to keep their workers right now because it's so hard to find them. And I hear stories like a small restaurant owner down in southeast Minnesota. He was telling me, you know, he has a really good cook, and the cook got picked up for a nonviolent offense the day before Christmas last year. He bailed him out, not because he needed him from work. The business was closed, but he wanted that cook to be able to spend time with his family. And I don't think that stories like that are anomalous when it comes to small businesses, because they're the backbones of main streets across the state.
I have a lot of follow-up questions I'd like to direct for both of you, but we also have a lot of people calling in. So we're going to go right to the phone lines, and then we'll weave in some other questions. But first, what I'd like to do is go to Sarah. And Sarah, you're in Minneapolis?
I am.
And what is your comment or observation?
First of all, I'm a small business owner. And in full support of this paid leave policy. I, as a small business owner, have looked numerous times to get into the private market and what's available. It's unaffordable. Not to mention there's cancer waivers. I have to pass that cost on to my employee. This is an affordable option for me as a business owner, and I fully support this. And again, I'm a micro business owner. So when I hear businesses say, well, what am I going to do if my employee's gone for 12 weeks? Well, do you value your employee? Why wouldn't you want them to get the healing or, you know, family bonding and those kinds of things? So the other option is to what? Let them go.
And what is your business, Sarah?
I have a small retail food store in southwest Minneapolis.
Ah, and how many employees?
Two.
Two. Okay.
Two. At one point, we had six because we had two stores, but we did close one of our stores a couple of years ago.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling in. And now I want to go to Tony, and Tony is in Rochester. Tony?
Yes, thank you so much for covering this really important topic. And I really want to thank Representative Richardson and Senator Mann. This is an issue that I've been advocating for since 2015. been up at the Capitol, a lot of community events, talking to my neighbors, friends. I have paid leave for myself if I would get sick, but my situation is I've been family caregiver for five family members. My mom and dad, when they were diagnosed with significant illnesses at the same time, when their health started to decline, I became guardian for my developmentally disabled brother who lives in a group home. And then I have two adult children that have had significant health issues through the years. I feel like I'm part of the sandwich generation where it's like I was caring for my kids, caring for my parents, and it just was a lot of stress and worry over, can I afford to take time off from work where I needed to be there when they were in the emergency room or being discharged to a skilled nursing or back in their home. And I have declared bankruptcy in the past. This is when I was caregiving for my two children. I was a single mom with no child support, and it was tough to keep a roof over our head, food in the fridge, and gas in the car. Mm. So that's something that, as a grandmother, I've got 10 grandkids, I do not want my grandkids to have to struggle like this. I do not want my kids who are now in their 30s to struggle. And we can do better, and we are doing better. And it's the voices of all of the citizens of Minnesota that have stood up and said it's time. So thank you again, Representative Richardson, Senator Mann. I really appreciate your work.
Well, thank you very much. And now I want to go to Mel. And Mel, you're in St. Paul. That's right, St. Paul?
Yes, I'm in St. Paul.
And what is your observation?
Yeah, so I am I'm a community organizer with Mainstream Alliance. We organize small business owners for more just and equitable local economy. With this bill, this has been something that our leaders have, you know, fought for a few years. And the average, like, business size of our membership is 20 employees or fewer. So just speaking from the experience of, like, working with folks who, you know, have really, really tiny businesses, this bill is the most affordable, most accessible solution for both themselves and their employees. I've, you know, heard stories from folks who've had to walk away from their careers just to pick up, like, a corporate job with unpaid maternity leave, like, driving 90 minutes each way. Folks who have had to go back and forth and just aren't able to, you know, step away from your business if they're the only person running it, which is very common for mom and pop stores to take care of a dying parent, for example.
Right.
The thing is, it doesn't, you know, the need for leave is already there.
Okay.
This just, ensures that folks who need the leave are able to get compensated for, you know, if you need a medical reason or a family reason for you to be out.
Well, thank you for calling in. Thank you very much. And, John, I'm going to turn to you first. You know, these three callers, their stories, their observations. I mean, what is your reaction? What would you like to pull out of their stories?
Sure. I think that all situations are unique, and that's why a voluntary approach would be better. So if people wanted to pool together and purchase family and medical leave insurance or just medical leave insurance or however you want to take care of it, that would be a much better option because for one thing, I think that the payroll tax will end up being much higher because no other state has tried a leave length and a wage replacement level of this magnitude. And also, not all workers are looking for the same thing. That's another thing I hear over and over from our small business members. Some workers want more vacation. Some workers want a 401k match. Some want a higher percentage of their medical premium paid. And there's not an infinite pool of money for labor costs. That's just the reality. So if the state's coming in and saying that all of a sudden X percent of your labor costs are going to have to go to this program, that's going to have an impact on other benefits that employees like. And so this is going to be disruptive for both employees and employers.
And do you have a sense of what you said it might have an impact on other benefits? Are there other benefits that you particularly see that are vulnerable?
What I have heard is that in order to accommodate the cost of this program, both in terms of the payroll tax, which I think will end up being much higher, something like 1.2 to 1.5% based on data from other states, is that, you know, both in terms of the payroll tax and the cost of finding replacement workers or losing production and losing sales because you don't have the people to run your business or keep your doors open full time, that, you know, you're going to see things like employer share of medical premium go from 100% down to, say, 75 or 50%, right? That's the way that they're going to have to make adjustments. There's just not a finite pool of money. There's no pot of gold in the back office of the businesses that I represent, right? There's not even a back office a lot of the time.
And Representative Richardson, the three callers who came in, what would you like to emphasize? What struck you?
You know, I would say a couple of things. One, when we talk about a voluntary program, which is what we have now, we know that most workers are left out of a voluntary program. And even for these small businesses that are looking for options, they're not able to find something that is affordable. And so I think understanding that with this insurance risk pool being pulled across the entire state, it becomes more affordable. And, you know, and I just want to lift up one thing around the weeks. I mean, the bill that we have, we're in the middle. Rhode Island has 30 weeks. California has a 68-week cap. New Jersey, 38. New York, 26 weeks. Massachusetts, 26 weeks. And so the bill that we have is right in the middle in terms of thinking about the number of weeks. And I also think it's really important to lift up within this bill, there is premium relief for the smallest of businesses. And many of the micro businesses in this state, they will pay nothing towards the premiums for this because there was a recognition for those small micro businesses that there was a need for support.
And how is a micro business defined? What are the what employee levels are we talking about?
So there is premium relief that is designed for employers with under 30 employees. When we talk about the micro businesses, we're talking about those with less than 10 employees. But employers with 10 to 30 employees would also see some premium relief as well.
And Representative Richardson, and then I want to go to the phones, but I do want to ask your response to this. You know, there's criticism that this is a one-size-fits-all bill.
You know, I would say there are many ways that this is not a one-size-fits-all bill. You know, I just talked about the premium relief for businesses with 30 or less employees. So we're recognizing that those smaller businesses, which are the backbone of our communities, will need more support. This bill also recognizes the intricacies that come in with having a seasonal business, for example, as well. And understanding that when folks are having people come in for 150 days or less, that it's not the same as, you know, working year round. And so there are supports for seasonal businesses as well. And I would just lift up the fact that this bill is a collection of many different voices, including small businesses, large businesses, the insurance industry, the faith community, nonprofits. It's really a collection of voices that have been represented within this bill.
And John, before I go to the phones, just one, it seems like there's some flexibility built into this bill, but how do you look at it?
Yeah, in terms of the small business relief, this is one of the stingiest programs probably in the country. Washington, which is often cited as example or basis for this legislation, exempts employers under 50 from the entire employer premium share. So the sort of payroll tax relief in this bill is much less than what's proposed there. And, you know, in terms of what... the leave length, you know, California and Rhode Island are entirely employee paid programs without reinstatement requirements. And this bill, again, has 20 weeks, which is on the longer side, a very high wage replacement level and very stringent employment regulations attached to it, which are going to lead to higher than expected utilization and more problems for small businesses trying to staff and keep their doors open. And I would just say, you know, too, that if you look at other PFML states, this is not some sort of silver bullet for bringing workers into the workforce. California and New York, which have had programs for many years, saw 250,000 person decline in their workforce from the beginning of 2020 to the end of 2022. And non-PFML states like Texas and Florida saw huge gains. Florida's workforce grew by 550,000 people. Texas grew by 750,000 people. And, you know, we've heard these sorts of promises about this being a miracle cure for workers and just a great boon. But before, and I think that the Minneapolis Federal Reserve study that just came out on the minimum wage increases in those cities is a great example where, you know, we were promised that wages would go up and there'd be no adverse consequences. But the reality is that aggregate pay declined and job opportunities declined significantly in both of those cities. 28% fewer retail job opportunities in Minneapolis and a third fewer limited service food jobs in St. Paul. So, you know, I think that there was a lot of focus over the course of developing this legislation on, you know, the biggest and boldest benefit set in the country. I think there was less concern about the real impact both on workers, opportunities, and small businesses.
Let's go to John. And John, you're in Plymouth. And what is your observation?
Well, I mean, to start, I got to tell you, I'm not in favor of this, especially the way that it's being pushed through. The reason for that is quite simply is, first of all, the excess tax that was collected by the state really shouldn't be theirs to be sent back out any way they choose to. That money belongs to the residents. It needed to go back. There should have been involvement by both small business and other groups before this was put into place. I'm a small business owner. My wife is as well. And we make accommodations for our employees regularly, whether it's, you know, for maternity leave or family problems. And I know a lot of small businesses that do. The timing on this could not be worse. Finding employees, capable employees right now is extremely difficult, and this is going to make things much worse. I do not believe that the representative and her cohorts did a lot of homework.
What is your business?
I'm a contractor. My wife is a dentist.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling in. And now I want to go to Anya, I hope I got your name right, and you're from Edina?
Yep, that's me. Thanks for taking my call. I had a child during medical school training, and my question is, I have a question, which is, like, how might this program benefit people who might need to take some time away from, like, their studies and a program into which they're personally paying?
Yes, so Representative Richardson, can you answer this one?
Sure. So this bill is about ensuring that individuals have the opportunity to care for themselves or their family members to take leave from employment. And so if you are an employee of the university that you're working for example, that would be an opportunity for someone to be able to have access to take care of themselves or to bond with a new child.
And I want to give we need to take a break for the news soon, but I want to give both of you a chance. You know, John and his wife, they're both small business owners. He's a contractor. And, you know, John feels very strongly that this is going to make it hard for in an era when it's hard to find labor. This is just going to make it more difficult to find labor. So, Representative Richardson, white businesses having a hard time finding the workers they need. Is this going to exacerbate that problem?
Well, there is a real war on talent that is going on right now. And I think it's important that we also look at the research that is out there. What we know is that 61% of adults who are planning to move within the next 2 years, that they're more likely to move to a state that has paid family and medical leave. And within the research, it also shows that paid leave and access to that is one of the top three priorities that people prioritize when they're thinking about where they want to move. And as we think about the future of our workforce, Gen Z and millennials see access to paid family and medical leave as one of the top issues, for relocation. There's been a lot of research and a lot of studies done around this. This bill has been in play for almost 10 years at the Capitol, and it is widely popular. Nationally, 85% of voters support access to paid family and medical leave. And the recent polls that were done here in Minnesota show that there is overwhelming support for these bills as they have been written here within the state as well.
And John, why don't you offer something that Representative Richardson said? You know, there is a lot of evidence. You always have to be wary about surveys, but there is a lot of survey evidence that the younger generations, the people who are coming into the workforce now, you know, they really want to be working in an area that has paid family leave, that this is an expectation that seems to be growing among a younger generation. Are you seeing that? Is that something that you think we should be taking seriously?
What I hear from our small business owners is that younger people prize flexibility above all, right? That's the key for millennials, of which I am one, and I prize flexibility above all myself. Key for millennials and Gen Zers. And again, I'd point to not surveys, not polls, and polls are a bad basis for public policy often, but I'd point to U.S. Census data, right? From the beginning of 2020, February 2020, to the end of 2022, California and New York, both PFML states, lost 250,000 workers each. Texas and Florida, non-PFML states, Texas gained 750,000 workers, Florida gained 550,000 workers. People are moving to warmer climates. They're moving to the mountains because they prize flexibility. They prize the ability to recreate. And they're not looking for a one-size-fits-all program, right? If you're a worker who is, in your 60s, you're not looking for this full complement of benefits that this bill is forcing on you. If you're a worker in your 20s, right out of college, you're not looking for the full complement of benefits here. And this just takes away so much flexibility. I think John at Plymouth nailed it, right? Flexibility is key for small business owners. It's key for employees. And it's just very, very different to think that it's wrong to think that small business has the same level of ease or same time trying to manage replacement of an employee as, say, Walmart or 3M, right? It's just not the same. And it's also not the same to do this in, it's probably easier to find employees in Bloomington than it is in Big Fork. So, I mean, for so many different reasons based on business size and location, that's why one-size employment regulations rarely work out well in practice. And why, leading up to now, the legislature has tended to give small employers much more flexibility than large employers. Key parts of this bill, key parts of the regulations in this bill are taken directly from Federal Family and Medical Leave Act, which only applies to employers with over 50 employees. And you can see that in the way it's written. And it imposes it wasn't written with small businesses in mind, and it imposes incredibly inflexible mandates and requirements on employers.
So first, let's go to Angela in Minneapolis. And Angela, what is your comment?
Hi, my name's Angela, and I run a bookstore in Minneapolis. And
which one?
It's a small business. We've got 7 employees, Moon Palace Books.
Okay, yes, I've been there.
Yeah, and this past week, one of my employees' mother had emergency surgery. And when her mother gets out of the hospital, she's going to need to take time off to take care of her. And I wish we had this program, paid family and medical leave, in place, 6 years ago, so that I didn't have to worry about how it was going to pay her while she's gone. taking care of her mother. One of the things that I love about this plan is that it is flexible. It gives me so much flexibility as a small business owner, and gives my employees flexibility. We've talked a lot about it at work, and we're all really incredibly supportive.
Well, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. And now let's go to John in St. Louis Park. John? John, I'm sorry for some, there's some, you sounded from, you were calling us from the moon for some reason there. So, so John, I want to turn to you. You know, here's a small business owner, employees, you know, life happens. Couldn't this program actually help the small business owner who's dealing with a situation like Angela was dealing?
Well, I think, first, I like Moon Palace books. I used to
Isn't it great? I love
there.
It.
It's great. The whole Minnehaha strip down there is fantastic. But, you know, this is why, again, I point to the voluntary approach, right? If a small business owner thinks that this sort of leave or some variation of it can work, and if you like flexibility, you should want to be able to design your own program, not have one forced on you by the state. If they think that this is going to work for them, then that's the value in creating a voluntary pool, which is the approach that other states have taken, which keeps costs down and creates some stability for small employers and doesn't rely on the state, you know, filling out a 400-person agency and developing a new IT system, which is something that we've really struggled with, right? If you think that, you know, this is going to require an entirely new IT platform, right? An entirely new experience for workers. Instead of going to your employer and asking for time off, you're going to be going to the state now and asking. When you have a baby, you need to go to the state and ask, and the state will tell you how much time you qualify for and how much pay you're going to get. That's a very different experience that hasn't really gone well in other states post-launch. And we don't have Minnesota on a bipartisan basis, doesn't have a very good track record of building out successful IT systems. If you think back to MinLars and MinSure and even Health Match before that. So I really worry about the, you know, not just the impact on small businesses, but or not the direct, just the direct impact on small businesses, but also the residual impact from a potentially poor user experience.
And Representative Richardson?
Yeah, you know, a couple of things. I'll start with the IT piece first, because I think it's important to lift up that DEED was the first, our Department of Economic and Employment and Development was the first state in the nation to stand up the pandemic unemployment insurance program in the nation and to get benefits paid out to Minnesotans. So let's make sure that we're lifting up the good work that they were doing there as well. And I also think it's really important to understand that if you happen to work at a small employer, you can still get sick. Your family members can still need help too. So this idea that we should draw this line in the sand at employers with 50 or less does not take into the account the real issue here, that the humanity that people have in order to be able to care for themselves. I also think it's important that, you know, I've heard Florida lifted up a number of times in this conversation, and I've been watching all weekend. There are empty farm fields, empty grocery stores, and empty construction sites that are going on right now within Florida. And I think it's important that we lift up here in Minnesota, that those who have access to paid family medical leave right now, the vast majority of people with that benefit don't take any leave in any given year. And in fact, the research from the University of Minnesota shows that those who have access to paid leave, less than 13% of folks are taking that leave on any in any given time period, and the average length of that leave is about 6 to 6.6 weeks. And so, I think it's important when people recognize if you have someone who has cancer or if they have a heart attack, they are not going to be able to come into work. And so this idea that we would not do this program because people would need to have replacements, that's going on right now. And having a program that is all about people volunteering to do this just hasn't worked. And it leaves the vast majority of Minnesotans out.
Let's go to Roger in Golden Valley. And Roger, what is your observation?
Good morning, Chris. Glad to have you in the spot this morning. I'm a newborn intensive care doctor, retired neonatologist, pediatrician. I have 2 points to make. What we hear that lots of small businesses actually provide this service. I think that means that lots of them don't, and we need this for everybody. My biggest beef and difficulty in taking care of newborns in the nursery over 30 years is that so frequently families aren't able to be there, that the baby needs them while they're still in the hospital. The mother needs to be recovering. Mother needs to nurse the child, but don't leave out the fathers. Fathers need to be there too, and so often they're the ones who are stuck going back to work when they're really not ready, not in a position to fall in love with that kid like they really need to.
Yeah.
And so my point is, we really need this for the children, not just the newborn intensive care. Every pediatric hospital experiences this day in and day out. The child is sick. The child needs help from his family, and the family can't be there. And so let's do it for the kids.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate your calling in. And now let's go to Andrew in Plymouth. Andrew?
Hi there.
Now, I understand you're also a small business owner?
Yeah. So I have a business partner. We have 3 retail stores in the Twin Cities area. And I think this is amazing. We've offered paid time off for our employees since we first got started. And I've heard several people say it now. I think there's just a huge disconnect with what reality is. I mean, the fact is people are going to get sick. The fact is people are going to have family members that get sick. So I've heard several people give the example of, hey, I'm not going to have an employee or I'm going to have to find someone new. Well, either way, you're going to have to replace that employee if they get sick. So let people have time off. Give people some flexibility with their health care, the loved one's health care, and I think it'll lead to better employer retention. If you offer things like PTO, paid time off, you'll find better employees. That's just the matter.
And how it works. And what are the business that you own?
So we do device repair, so we're CPR cell phone repair.
Oh, okay.
And we have a location in Minneapolis and Minnetonka and Plymouth.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for calling in. And now I want to go to Peggy. And Peggy, you're in Jordan. Is that right?
Yes. I live in Jordan, yes.
Yeah.
I have a small business in Northeast Minneapolis.
And what is the business?
It's Spring Street Tavern. We're a local neighborhood bar.
Ah, okay.
So, well, I want to say we're talking about, oh, we don't want a one-size-fits-all system. Well, what do you think we have right now? We have a one-size-fits-all, rather, only fits. I mean, who does it fit, really? But that argument, I think, is not valid because we have a one-size-fits-all system right now, which is terribly, inflexible and poses awful threats to people that can't take time off when they need it. And then I also think that it would be fabulous to share the cost of this among everyone, because when I have people who are sick or have family crisis, I would love it if we all chipped in, because this kind of thing can happen to any of us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. I think I'm going to try and squeeze in one more phone call. And this one, Dwayne from Mendota Heights. Dwayne?
Well, thank you for taking the call. Basically, I just was a little upset with John as far as his conversation relative to the way small business is being hurt by this. I'm a part owner of a small business in medical care, and we are often losing workers from our small system to bigger systems that can have the bandwidth to develop programs like paid family medical leave for their employees, where we cannot. We can't afford to do that. And so, again, I think this program would allow our workers, which are often female, frankly, a possibility of continuing to work and continuing to contribute and continuing to take care of their families and their loved ones. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Dwayne. And John, I'll go to you first because Dwayne mentioned you in his comments. So, you know, out of these three callers, what would you like to emphasize or pluck out?
Sure. I think, you know, what I hear again from our 10,000 small business members is that any sort of employment regulation, any sort of benefit that they offer, and wages, compensation, has to fit within the means of their business. And that's where imposing the same requirements, same regulations, same obligations on, you know, again, Walmart or 3M or pick your largest company in the state, as the smallest five-person shop just doesn't work for them. And, you know, throughout the legislative process, again, we've heard a lot about the theoretical benefits. We've heard much less about we haven't heard an answer to the question of how will small businesses keep their doors open? Because the way that the bill is structured, the employment regulations that are taken from federal rules that were never meant to apply to small businesses in the first place, basically mean that most small businesses, this is what my members tell me, are going to have to hold that job open, which means that if they're able, they're going to have to backfill the work through overtime. They're not going to be able to find a temp worker for 3, 4, 5 months, especially for skilled jobs. And more likely than not, they're just going to do less. They're going to have less sales. And I think it's sort of offensive to small business owners to suggest that if they don't support this program, they don't care about their employees. I mean, that's just not the case. Our members, small business owners, work so hard to keep their doors open. I talked to a man in the 70s who runs a specialized customized equipment shop out in Medina. He's worked every day, 7 days a week for the last 12 years with five employees to keep his business going. He cares deeply about his employees.
Okay. Now, I want to, Representative Richardson, we're just about running out of time here, but I also want to, you know, give you an opportunity to emphasize from the three callers what you heard.
Yeah, you know, I think what we've heard this morning on the calls, you know, be it from Angela, Peggy, Dwayne, and what we have seen throughout the years that I've been carrying this bill and even previously, there are many small businesses that support this bill. In fact, when we were debating it on the House floor, we had many small businesses that were represented within the gallery showing their support. The affordability of this is really what is key for them. And what we know with, you know, privatized insurance markets, they're experience rated. And we've heard this morning how businesses could not afford that. And we also recognize that with those private insurance models, we know who pays the higher premiums. Women pay higher premiums. People of color pay higher premiums, and low-income workers pay higher premiums than others. And what the data also shows us is the people that are most likely to have their claims denied are people of color and low-income folks as well. And so this is really about spreading the costs across the state to ensure people have access to the leave that they need.
Well, thank you. I want to thank both of you. That music is a signal that we're coming to a close. Representative Ruth Richardson is a DFL lawmaker in the Minnesota House representing Mendota Heights. John Reynolds is a Minnesota State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. And this conversation was produced by Maya Beckstrom and Danielle Kultia.
Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder that if you want to catch my show in real time, tune in and call in weekdays at 9 a.m.